This week on the PhD cast, Naked Communications Will Collin denounces communications planning as a broken discipline and offers reciprocity as its alternative. We discuss and debate the merits of the argument. Plus, for those of you who couldn't make it, we discuss YouTube's Brandcast. That and more on the PhD cast from PhD Australia. Hey, I'm Chris Stevenson, and joining me on the PhD cast on this very sunny day in Sydney are regulars Lauren Oldham.
Hello.
And Christian Svara.
Hello.
And Jess.
Hello.
And Stu.
Hi, all.
How are you all doing today?
Great.
Those are the joys of spring.
Oh, that's nice. I'm a little tired today. I'm a little bit tired after all the excitement of last night, which we'll get to later in the PhD cast. But first this week, the co-founder of global communications agency Naked Communications has wrote a piece recently on Mumbrella, where he discusses and talks about how communications planning is in crisis and no longer fit for the modern world. Essentially for two reasons. He argues that communications planning is in what he calls a double bind. One, it cannot work with what is intrinsically unpredictable environment. So PhD wrote a book called Fluid a few years ago, which talked about how because we're so interconnected and because comms are connected, then influence can and information can travel around really, really quickly. Comms planning cannot take account of that unpredictability and the speed of information and influence. The second thing that holds it back is an imbalance in the value exchange, and which is effectively that the comms planning asks more from consumers than it gives. And two examples of that are Andrex, which asks people to tell the brand whether they scrunch or fold. Ridiculous questions, obviously fold. And Kingsmill, who had a similar highly engaging idea. His proposed solution, Will's proposed solution, is that we're in a third age where we should be thinking about reciprocity. So beyond traditional advertising, beyond communication planning, into reciprocity, where the source of value could be entertainment, but it could also be many other things, like social currency, utility, an opportunity to rally around a cause or connecting people. He argues that by doing that, we safeguard comms planning or planning for the future, and it'll safeguard and get us out of this current crisis. The longest intro ever, but hopefully a fairly succinct summary of the argument. It's on Umbrella if you want to go read it. Guys, what do we make of it? What do we make of Will, who's awesome, Will's argument and line of thought?
Well, my argument, like, I agree with it to an extent, but I'm just questioning whether it's something that's already happening, because when you're actually requesting engagement from a consumer, then you always have to know that you need to give something in return. So if it's a view of your content, then you need to make sure that your content's going to be amazing and it will be actually, the consumer will actually benefit from watching it. So I understand it, but I think it's kind of another articulation of what's already happening, but
yeah, I would agree. I think I like there's lots in there. There's like a massive in that article. There's a lot of different thoughts. I do like the value equation. So that's really important. Like, understandably, the kind of interruption model isn't working in the same way it used to. So people are wanting a better sense of value for engaging with brands and letting brands tell their stories to consumers, and that value can be in the form of participation, it could be in the form of utility, all the things that were discussed. So I definitely like that. I think some of the rejections around traditional comms planning, I think he rejects or questions the validity of around kind of the consumer journey planning, and I think for me absolutely wrong, because understanding the A and B points and where you want to get people to and from are fundamentals of behaviour change, and how we use behavioural economics tools and tactics within that journey.
And I know few people who enjoy a good consumer journey more than you.
Well, exactly. As Nelly would say, consumer journey gurney.
I did not know that until just now.
Well,
well done, Nelly. And congratulations.
Yes, congratulations. Obviously, an avid listener. The examples that he cites in the article are, well, are also tactical instances of brands leveraging an idea in a really bad way. That's not comms planning, right? To say that that is an example of comms planning is vastly undermining the amount of work that people put into it. So yeah, great. I mean, he's just trying to build an argument. I get that. For me, I don't think there's loads of validity, but probably not around the specifics about how it relates to comms planning.
I think another interesting point that they brought up was that value was the value equation is different for every consumer. So just because you think something might be really interesting doesn't mean that the next consumer over would feel that way. So that was also, to me, as thinking about how comms planners, me not being one, work to try to figure out that, strike that balance between trying to get as many people to feel that they're getting value from a brand as possible to actually kind of holding true to what they're trying to plan is interesting as well.
Can I ask a dumb question?
Never a dumb question.
So, like, an example of this would be to say, you know, like our Facebook page for extra content, right?
Yeah.
Is that what we're talking about here?
But yeah, it's an evolution of the kind of, well, Naked have been in this space around kind of flipping the ADA model, so awareness, interest, desire, action, and doing it the other way around. So if you create action, if you get someone to do something for you, then actually there's a proven link to them having greater propensity for your message and to buy your brand, basically. So so if you get someone to like your Facebook page in this minutiae level, then yes. So, but what I guess the evolution of that is the reciprocity of it. So by liking it, you've got to give me value to do that. So then what's the value that I can add for that action as a brand?
Yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah, I kind of think that the argument relies on a very deliberately narrow definition of communication planning, right? And that's what Will does now. Will is entirely allowed to do that. He helped create it, right? He helped create comms planning in the around the turn of the century, right? So he's qualified to do that. But I do think that when you define comms planning in such narrow terms, which is effectively sequential comms that nudge people along a consumer journey through engagement, with engagement being the end point of that, then yes, it is going to run into trouble, and it is going to go and get so far. I think that I see comms planning as broader than that. I see comms planning as essentially being much more idea-centric, and comms planning is about maximising the ideas against an audience at relevant touch points in such a way that you achieve objective X. And objective X isn't always engagement. Mm-hmm. It could be sales, it could be participation, it could just be reach or awareness.
And in fact, it rarely is engagement to drive genuine metrics.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that if you define it so narrowly, then yes, you will need something else to fix it, because it will be limited.
But even then, that model isn't broken. I mean, he argues that works. Like, putting a big TV ad in there, telling people a message, I've got a new brand or a new variant, it's here, amazing, reaching as many people who might potentially buy that product as possible, and then translating that through an amazing point of purchase gondola end or whatever, drive sales. So absolutely, that I think the word engagement for me is always a worrying.
It's very loaded, isn't it? It's what in research you call a very fat word. It's a word that has as many meanings as the people who will hear it.
It has a whole word of spectrum around it. So this is where it comes back to what we were talking about always, like coming back to the engagement pyramid. Do I actually want somebody to do something that's pretty hard, like for instance go into the Red Bull Flugtag and build an airplane, right? So that's on the top of the engagement pyramid, and the bottom of the engagement pyramid there are the people who actually don't really want to engage to that level with brands. They are just passive watchers of what the others are doing, and you need to make sure, and this is where actually reciprocity is quite interesting, you need to make sure that also you need to provide something for them that they watch because of the fun of it. So what you're creating at the top of the pyramid needs to be just as beneficial and interesting on the bottom of the pyramid.
But I think the point of comms planning is that plays out in different ways. That again, one of the basis of the argument is that everyone that you'll plan for everyone in the same way. Well, there's actually, there is a long tail of it, let's call it involvement. There's a long tail of involvement with any idea, with any campaign. Some people will be super involved. They'll be the top of the pyramid, and you'll need those connections and touch points to facilitate and allow that, whether that's social media, whether it's additional content, whatever it is. The vast majority of people will still be the passive master, and they'll be passive watchers, and they're really important because that's where scale comes from, it's where critical mass comes from, and it's those light and light consumers e-coms where you're going to get all your volume of engagement, and therefore that's when you're going to see the shifts generally in terms of business sales or increase in adoption.
Can I ask another question? I'm gonna, since we've got all the comms planning heads here. One thing that I was reading through this, I kind of kept feeling like we try to create value or falsify value through using competitions. And I don't know, like that's what, when I was reading this, I kind of felt like it was kind of advocating competitions to try to force people to engage more. I don't know, we, not PhD, but we as an industry, I feel, always just default to let's give shit away, even if it's not even relevant to our brand. How many times have you seen people just go, oh, win a new car if you
do this? Money is default, but money, if you talk to any research agency, money tends to be the thing that most consumers want, obviously, which is like, really, never knew that. So there's an easier way to then go, oh, win a $50 or win $1 million or what. So actually then, you're right, I think, I don't think it's advocating competition. I think what it's trying to do is raise the question around what value means. So, as someone said earlier, the value equation is different for different people, and depending on where you are on the involvement spectrum, what you want from that, it can just be, look at that, isn't that a funny gorilla playing an awesome song? That's value, right?
The involvement spectrum is the beers, doers, watchers.
Yeah. We say beers, doers and watchers, but it's how some people will get really involved, some people just won't care.
And there are obviously great examples of campaigns that have genuinely done this. I think that Nike's the king of this. If you look at the Nike runs, whether it's Run the Night, whether it's Run London, whether it's Run whatever it was, mass participation events that wouldn't exist if it wasn't for that brand's marketing. Yeah, it's marketing that creates phenomenal value and that you get to run with people. A great insight that people don't like to run alone. And they do that. Another example is Small Business Saturdays. I think it's a great example of a bit of marketing which tangibly adds value and creates a value exchange for small businesses. So it does a B2B job and a customer job. PhDs work for Unilever in India, where they created radio, free radio. There are lots of examples of this. And you don't need a new discipline to create these. All these examples emerged from communication planning and understanding the context and the opportunity to add value where you can.
I think where it's interesting is you talked earlier about the importance of the idea, and I think where we're seeing kind of the consolidation or the potential blurring of boundaries between different agency disciplines, and so where does that idea sit, it becomes really interesting. Because if you actually think about it, like, go back, I was talking to a client today around, like, Coca-Cola, when they created their kind of Hilltop ad, have you seen that? I like the people to drink a Coke, that one. Famous, very famous piece of creative and execution. That's value, because it's having an opinion about the Vietnam War. That, like, that cultural tension is so valuable, and it's really interesting. So the equation's always been out there. The internet does change that value equation significantly, so it's less about that's nice, here's the stuff I really want, when you're watching a piece of content. So, but it doesn't mean that is broken, it just means there's evolution, there's opportunity to expand that more.
And scale it. I mean that's one of the great things the digital technology does. It allows you to scale engagement. For me, what's actually very interesting is when you get great ideas that fail to be scaled and don't get scaled. I think there are a lot of examples of really good ideas that only land in an experiential space. And that aren't scaled and digital is a great way to do that.
Yeah. But also the blurring of those boundaries, so experiential ideas can be the focus of your TVC. Many instances have done that. So it's about, once again, it's just about having some good ideas based on insight. that allows you to be flexible about the value you can add in that equation.
And that's what TBCs remain amazing at, the amplification of ideas. That they are second to none at it. The fundamental problem we've got is that they're seen as the ends rather than a means.
Yes.
That is the bottom line of the problem, that the too many conversations in this industry revolve around how do we make an ad, not how do we create an idea that we can then amplify with an ad.
Yeah, agree. And I think that's exactly right. I mean, many client conversations we have in that same space.
And I think in that regard, I think this article is a valuable contribution to that. And it's a valuable piece of that puzzle. And it's a valuable, and certainly from the context it gives. And I think from someone who created comms planning to give that his interpretation of that historical context is incredibly valuable.
Also, I think really interesting politically, thinking everyone was looking, especially in this market, what are Naked going to do after Adam Ferrier leaving, and well, a lot of the senior people leaving, in fact, and to have this interesting perspective, I think, and it's a nice evolution of where they've been from kind of the behaviour change theory work that they've done. So it's definite extension around that. So I think that is a really interesting space to operate in and to try and to own.
Awesome stuff. And speaking of finding an interesting space to operate in and own,
well, just like YouTube.
Well, exactly. Well, that brings us to Brandcast. Now, last night, a couple of us were lucky enough to go along to quite an amazing event. Stu, what happened last night?
It was Google's Brandcast, which is basically a celebration of all things YouTube. They had some amazing announcements, and they basically wanted to launch their premium content part of their platform. So YouTube is famed for a huge amount of videos and huge amount of content, and advertisers for a long while have been asking, how can you help us navigate some of the best content? And how can we aggregate and attach ourselves to that in more premium environments?
You've been spending too much time with Google because you're way.
I helped work on the campaign. I know it verbatim.
Because your way into that was advertisers have been asking us, how can we use your platform better? that's what advertisers have done.
Yes, as obviously disclaimer, as Google's media agency, we have been working with them intensively on this campaign.
Yes, full disclosure. And we love working with them, and it's amazing.
Absolutely. So it was an amazing event. Obviously, a very only Google can do experience. So Empire of the Sun. We had, I'm going to forget their names. Jess, you know who they are.
Bethany Mota and Troy Sivan.
Who are?
And so, Jess, before I get them, if anyone doesn't know, who are these people?
So they are both massive, massive YouTube celebrities. They've got huge following. So Bethany's YouTube subscribers is nearly 7.5 million people.
7.5 million people subscribe to Bethany's videos.
Yeah. And Troy has 2.7 million followers.
And there's only 11 people in Australia have more than a million subscribers on YouTube. And that includes 5 Seconds of Summer.
Yeah. Yes, it does. Well, good fact. and not only that, it's sickening the how young these people are and how entrepreneurial they are, and how much money they now have. But like, for example, Troy, you might have heard the song out there of Happy Little Pill. That's Troy.
And I actually had no idea, because I watched Troy's videos a while ago because I like to keep abreast of what the kids are up to. I caught Troy's videos a while ago, and then I heard that song in the gym and didn't put two and two together at all until last night. And went, oh my God, that's his song.
Yeah, I agree.
Well done him.
Absolutely. And then Bethany has made her, like, she's now on the US Dancing with the Stars. She's got her own clothing line with, partnered with Aposol, who's like a famous designer.
Ruby Rose couldn't say it either. So
no, exactly.
Right.
And so it's just an amazing, inspiring to see these people who have actually made a career and a life via the platform. So
and it is unbelievable the unabated confidence these kids have. They are absolutely fearless, Jess.
Jess, yeah, they are. But no, what's the most interesting is the sheer number of fans who are outside for them.
Like, I missed that.
I feel like I've missed this whole phenomenon. And there's like, there's a massive amount of following. Do you know when you're old and you listen to music, this is what my dad would say, and you don't like it, or that, I don't know why the kids are listening to that. I feel exactly that now. I just don't understand. Where was I when all this happened? But anyway, I think going back to the platform and the media discussion, so Google, YouTube were kind of highlighting how brands can get more involved in this space and take advantage of some of the premium content. That's on YouTube.
How are they defining premium content on YouTube?
I'm not particularly sure of that, to be honest. I think it's just the higher rating content.
Okay.
So the one
I think the argument is it's subscribers. So if you've got a content producer or content creator, as they would say, if you've got a creator who's got a whole load of subscribers, essentially the argument goes, and it holds, I think, that the people who are subscribing are more engaged with that person and with that creator, and they're more engaged with that content, and therefore by attaching yourself to that content on YouTube, you're building higher levels of engagement than you would if you were just in a passive broadcast stream. And I buy that. So subscription equals engagement.
It's partnering with these people as influencers, basically.
And I can see it as a vote for quality as well.
Yeah.
Or, you know, like either quality of the production or quality of the content, but it's a vote for quality in terms of, we like this, we want to continue.
The word advertiser friendly and advertiser safe were used quite a lot, and I think that is also quite useful to know.
Yeah.
So, like, being more premium, not the longer tail of stuff that potentially can get some advertisers annoyed or can be polarizing, I think.
And are these YouTube celebrities basically? So, is Google or YouTube as a brand is supervising these guys, or they are completely owning their brand?
They
completely
own their brand. It's just a platform. And that's great, and that's one of the kind of the philosophies around YouTube, that it is their platform. They're not there to create the content.
Democratizing
them. We have the founder of Vice magazine there, talking about how Vice News is growing on the platform. And then from a brand perspective, we had the Toyota, is it GM, potentially?
I think so, yes.
Head of Toyota talking about how important the YouTube platform was for leveraging the content that they create. So, yeah, it was really interesting. I think, actually, he was one of my favourites in terms of him just talking about how his experience with the platform has really helped the brand and linking back some interesting metrics around success and stuff. So I think it was a great event, and I think for me it definitely has, I'm sure, designed to do to raise the profile of YouTube as a platform.
Another question: there's an interesting kind of two online video buying opportunities, really categories, is like catch up TV and YouTube. And without having some of that more long form series content on YouTube, I think a lot of advertisers still have that perception that the catch-up stuff is going to be more valuable to them. Did they talk about anything about the difference between them and catch-up, or how
it's an interesting one, because we have the same debate actually internally at the moment, because with the catch-up stuff, there's a lot of inflexibility. So ironically, the broadcasters are using very similar models to how they've actually adopted their broadcast.
I mean, it's the broadcast interruption model applied online.
And so the other video platforms like YouTube are giving us more opportunity to play with metrics and target better and retarget and those kind of things.
Yeah.
So they obviously have a heritage of embracing that environment better, but that is a difference. So,
but also I think in the case of Toyota, it's a great example of a brand who isn't just using that channel for access. It's actually using it as a platform for its own point of view, its own content, its own engagement, and they're getting a lot of data as a result of that. So I think that I'm sure Google would agree that there's a false battle between YouTube and catch-up TV, because catch-up TV, one, is small.
It's different.
Yes.
And the fundamental, it's just TV online, really. Whereas I think they would argue, in terms of the dollars, that they want a slice of TV's pie. And as these billions of views now move off a broadcast stream and into an on-demand stream, those are the advertising dollars they want, and that's the play here.
Yeah, absolutely. No, yeah. It was a really good event, and obviously they had great entertainment, and it was done in a very Google way. I thought that was pretty awesome.
And we should say a big thank you. So a big thank you.
Well, should talk about the Group M thing. That's interesting.
Oh, should we? Awkward moment.
Just quickly.
So one of the deal, well, the deal that was done. They've done a deal. So Google done a deal. I just keep saying that. Google done a deal with Group M, where they get the top 5%. I'm out of time. They get the top 5% of, or they get first access.
Yeah, first
to the top 5%.
No, to everything.
Or to everything.
Yeah.
So in terms of premium content.
So this new platform, the premium platform.
Okay.
Group M have done a deal.
And it's called YouTube Preferred.
That's where I got that word from.
Advertising work.
Which is really, it's an interesting play on Group M's part to gone straight in there and kind of secure that inventory for their clients. Mm. I think it was a little bit of a weird bit in the evening because it was like.
There were only two weird bits. There were the women with the beach balls.
Yeah. Well, I didn't mind that. And there was
the Group M bit.
It was a bit like. Google did an amazing job of going, this is why you should be loving YouTube, everyone. And advertisers get excited because you can do this, scale.
And agencies get excited.
And agencies get excited. Well, we can't have any of it.
or not even that. I mean, for anyone who doesn't understand, the kind of rivalry that exists between these agency groups is... You know, like when we play together, but there's a lot of rivalry between agency groups. And it's almost kind of like getting all of Coca-Cola together in a room and then getting Pepsi on stage and saying, look how great these guys are for doing this deal. and effectively, you outraged about 30% of the audience, minimum, by doing that, right?
I agree. But I mean, the point is, there is still 95% of inventory on Google, YouTube that we can still access. And it's still huge, huge, important platform for us. And as one of Google's key partners, both from a media and planning and buying perspective, and an advertising perspective, we still have preferred kind of relationship with them, and we try and hold ourselves up as a Google agency.
Yeah, absolutely, and in that spirit, a massive thank you to Miley and Lucinda and all the team from last night, and thank you for having us along. It was an amazing event, And I got to meet Bethany, which was brilliant. It was very, very cool. I'm not sure who was more excited. Probably me. I think I was more excited.
I did as well. I have no idea who they are.
There's a lot of media people who've got photos with these people, and their kids are really excited about it, and they don't really know who they are. That's all we've got time for this week. A big thank you to Lauren.
Bye.
And Katie.
Bye.
And Jess.
Bye.
And Steve.
Thank you.
That was PhDcast. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next week. Plus, fresh from YouTube's Brandcast, we find out exactly who Bethany Moto is. And.
Moto.
Oh, this is ridiculous.
It's the
longest trial. We need a lot of intro music. Plus we dish all the dirt from YouTube's Brandcast. Dirt?
No.
No, we shouldn't
do that. That sounds like I'm giving away secrets or something.
Oh, this is ridiculous.
Plus, we discuss or talk about
YouTube's Brandcast of last night.
Plus,
fresh from YouTube's Brandcast, we discuss the play for the advertiser. Oh, fuck's sake.
I'm so tired.
What do I say about what? We're just saying.
Just say we discussed. We discussed
the event last night.
Yeah. Plus, for all those who weren't there last night.
Okay, go do that. And for those of you who weren't able to make it, we talk about YouTube's Brandcast.
All that and more on the PhD cast.
Oh, okay. Plus for those of you who couldn't make it, we discuss YouTube's Brandcast. That and more on the PhD cast from PhD Australia.
Yay!